This is the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania. I do two podcasts, this one on the Middle East and another on mainstream American politics. Thank you for listening to this podcast where we talk about issues in the Middle East, Palestine, Israel, and American policies. You can get more information on all of my podcasts by visiting www.hanania.com. I want to just take a minute to talk about the Arab-American community because we have so many challenges and so many hurdles. We're not addressing them. We have all these organizations. Our community is growing. And we have some, you know, achievements that are encouraging, but so many problems that exist that we've never repaired, that we've never changed, that hold us back. I mean, you know, the challenges facing our community are enormous, from the elections and politics to the news media, even the U.S. Census. I mean, there's an effort. In the beginning, in the 80s, I supported the census. In the 90s and 2000s, I was against the census. Now in the, today with the 2020 census, you know, I'm going to support the census. The community just won't change. I mean, you know, the census is like, it's supposed to be about money for empowerment. Instead, it becomes money, a place where people can get some money to pay for their organizations or fund, you know, their, activities or give themselves jobs. There's some people that are doing some really good work with the census, and then a lot of them that are doing nothing. The state of Illinois, for example, set aside $20 million to promote the census among various communities, and not $1 of that money was directly assigned to Arab American organizations or Muslim organizations. It was given to Hispanic and African American groups, and one of those subcontracted to an immigration organization subcontracted some of that money to two Arab organizations, one of which is really good. The Arab American Family Services are great organizations, but they're still very small. But another one, I don't even want to talk about, the Arab American Action Network, which is very political, and I don't think personally is very effective. That's my opinion. But, you know, we have to do more. It's like, we're not focused on what needs to be done. We always focus on the emotion. We want to go to Hafles and sing El Del Ona. We want to eat Mensif and Warak and Mashi and, you know, enjoy and, you know, do the Debka and clap our hands and sing and be happy. And that's our antidote for the suffering and the emotional distress and the frustration that we experience every day, not seeing anything happen with Palestine, not seeing any change in the Middle East, and not seeing even the society around us in the United States, like the news media. They don't acknowledge Arab Americans in a positive way. Politics, they don't acknowledge Arab Americans in a positive way. Even the census, despite wanting to work with them, the census doesn't recognize Arabs and Muslims as an ethnic identity that deserves special recognition. And that census money is so important, and census recognition is so important because it decides whether, if you know, you have a large concentration of Arabs in one region, you can create a congressional district based on that region. Instead, we have to fight, you know, in all these districts where we're substantive, but we don't have enough votes to control the district. All we want to do is, a lot of our leaders, the Arab American leaders, and these organizations, that, you know, they're physically here in this country and they're mentally back home. And what I mean by that is they're here, but they're not focused on what needs to be done here. They're focused on what needs to be done back home because they know that that's how the community can be manipulated. That's how the community can be controlled. That's how the community can be influenced, the Arab community. What they do is they pull at our emotions. They pull at our frustrations and suffering by yelling about Palestine and Israel, by complaining about Israel. And I'm not saying that Israel hasn't done enough to be, you know, criticized or complained about. They certainly have. But it's not very effective just to yell. It's not very effective when you have no voice in the news media. And even when we get Arabs in the news media, you know, it's so bad that Arabs who finally make it into the news media have to pretty much put their Arab identity in a box when they go and work their journalism jobs. Because if they become too loud in the journalism community, the journalism community will pull the rug out from under them and punish them. So they always have to be careful. There are several Arab Americans, especially in the media, at the local level, at the national level, who never talk about Palestine or the problems in Syria. Yet, in contrast, you look at other ethnic groups, African Americans, they're covering the Black Lives Matter protests, and they're engaged in promoting and supporting the Black Lives Matter protests. Hispanics, they're covering as journalists the census and wanting empowerment through the census, and they're involved in promoting the census. They're involved in pushing for more positions in the news media. So in Arabs, we are afraid, the ones that are in journalism, because they know the community is dysfunctional. Still, after all these years that we've been here, I wrote a book about Arabs of Chicagoland, which might as well be a cookie cutter for Arabs in the United States, because it's the same pattern. We get here, we arrive off the boat, we start, we learn, we open up businesses, we assimilate into American society, we don't forget our culture, and then our organizations imprison us in a cultural imprisonment where they say, we need to focus on Palestine, we need to focus on Syria, and the only way to do that is by attacking and criticizing our society. We blame Americans for our problems instead of blaming ourselves. So we have to change that. I mean, the Arab community has a real problem. There's some good organizations, but most of the organizations, worthless. Anyone who doesn't follow what they demand, they're attacked. Anyone who is independent of their organizations or their they're like dictators, presidents for life, they attack those people. Anyone who doesn't do what they say needs to be done, they attack. Meanwhile, most of the group pat themselves. They have these conferences where they pat themselves on the back. They give themselves awards. I mean, how many times have you seen the president of an organization give an award to another president of an organization? Or they give awards to people because they want donations. They want money. What they're not doing is they're not being productive. They cover their failures and lack of productiveness by exploiting the frustrations and emotions of the community. That's what they do, and that needs to change. This Rashida Tlaib, I have so many Arabs that are mad at me because I interviewed Brenda Jones, who is the former congresswoman in the 13th district, and Rashida Tlaib is the congresswoman now in the 13th district. Rashida Tlaib is Palestinian. She wears a Palestinian dress. She speaks Arabic. She talks about Palestine. I think that's all great. But if you don't agree with her, she hates you. She spends more time and energy focusing on her celebrity in the Arab and Palestinian community than she does building the coalition based on diplomacy and moderation and good leadership. She is an extremist. She got 1/3 of the vote in that district, and in a contest where there were 5 other candidates running, and 2/3 of the vote went to the other 5 candidates. Brenda Jones got almost 1/3 of the vote, and the remaining 4 candidates received the remainder of the vote. In this election, she's one-on-one with Rashida. Brenda Jones is one-on-one with Rashida, and I believe Brenda Jones is going to win. And I think that with Brenda Jones in office, she's going to be more receptive and more productive with the Arab and Palestinian community than Rashida Tlaib, who, I mean, for example, she doesn't like me because what? One of my friends is someone that she doesn't get along with? in Detroit. That it's like crazy. She blocked me from all her social media. What kind of congressperson worries about that detail? And that's the sign of ineffectiveness. When you worry about things like that, instead of dealing with the bigger picture, she spent her entire 18 months in office after she took office in January 2019, focusing on Palestine and Israel and ignoring the 13th District, which is 65% African American. She should have spent 95% of all her efforts focusing on the needs of the 13th District, and she would have been much stronger with that 5% and more effective to do something for Palestine and Israel. Instead of that, she has elevated herself as a radical and an extremist, disconnected herself from the community, and that's terrible. And then look at this fight in California with Amar Campa-Najjar and Darylisa. Darylisa, the Republican, left politics. And then he only came back when he saw that the young Amar Campa-Najjar, who's a Democrat, overcame all of the other Democratic candidates to win the nomination. So these two are going to go head-to-head in November, Darylisa and Amar Campa-Najjar, a Syrian-American and a Palestinian-American. Amar Campa-Najjar is basically half Palestinian and half Mexican-American. His mother is Mexican-American. His grandfather was, unfortunately, one of the people who planned the massacre of the Israeli Olympics. I think that was back in the 70s. But that was before he was even born. His opponents tried to use that, and he was very smart. But he distanced himself from the Arab American community, and he focused mainly on his Mexican American side through his mother's Mexican American heritage, and he's been able to capitalize on that. Darylisa, who did, I mean, what did he do for Palestine or Syria or Lebanon when he was in office? I don't recall anything. So, you know, that's a sad part. I mean, on the one hand, you have people like Rashida Tlaib who takes it to one extreme, and on the other hand, you have people like Darylisa who takes it to the other extreme. What we need is somebody in the middle who knows how to identify with Americans, to work for Americans, build the confidence and support of Americans, and then use that as a foundation to do good for Arabs. That, unfortunately, is not what's happening. We also need to understand how to communicate, because this is one of the big problems. You know, we do all kinds of things, and we don't document it. The Arab American community has many positive things. We don't document it. We don't record it. We don't report on it. What happens then is that when we don't do anything, we don't support our own Arab American media. So we allow the mainstream media to focus on us, and their only focus is negative. So the media only focuses on us when something bad happens, and they blame us. So the only time the public sees us is when the media reflects something negative about us, and they look at us and they say, oh, it must be bad, because that's what the media reports are. Where's the positive? We don't write any books. Arabs of Chicagoland is the only book in Chicago that talks about our history and what a great history that is of Arab Americans who served in the military, who are veterans, Arab Americans who have phenomenal businesses, who achieved great things in medicine and sciences. We don't even talk about that. And that's because the Arab American community, the organizations, are focused on themselves. They're not focused on the community. If they were focused on the community, they would support the Arab American media. But you look at all the Arab American media. Leila El Husseini, who does her radio show that I'm on sometimes, she does her show from Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 a.m., the only Arab American radio show, English and Arabic, that is broadcast every day of the week, during the week, Monday through Friday, and has a huge audience. But yet has to struggle because people are jealous of her. They don't want to support her. They don't like, you know, they think that maybe she puts people on that they don't like. So they get mad, you know, about that. It's terrible. It's really horrible. And then there's some papers, some really good newspapers that really could use some support. But the Arab community doesn't understand the power of marketing and communications and perception. Perception is reality. You manipulate perception. The truth isn't what wins an argument. It's the perception that wins the argument. But the Arabs don't understand it because they're unskilled. They're good doctors. They're good engineers. They're good business people. They're lousy organizers. And they're terrible in the news media, and they're terrible in communications. They need to change that, okay? It really isn't enough to sing El Delona at a hafla. It isn't enough to eat mensef with your hand. It isn't enough to enjoy Warak Diwali or Mashi. It isn't enough to do the Debka. It isn't enough even just to wear a Palestinian embroidered dress the way Rashida Tlaib does. What needs to be done, if there was somebody like Rashida Tlaib who understood that you set aside your personal angers, you set aside your emotion, and you reach out and build coalitions, not just in your community, but with other communities, that's how you're going to win. And then you lift up your community through that success. And you understand how to write a frickin' press release. Oh my God, the Arab American community is the worst community. They have no idea how to write a press release. A press release is the foundation of communications. And if you can't write a press release, you cannot get your story out. That's why we're stuck in this purgatory of self-fueled anger. We're frustrated, we're defeated, we are dysfunctional, we're divided, we fight with each other. I'll tell you, I've been dealing with this now for 45 years, and it all started one day. I was in college, I wanted to be a doctor, my freshman, my sophomore year at Northern Illinois, and I was studying to go into pre-med. That was my thing. I had a lot of relatives that were doctors, engineers, and business people, but I was going to be a doctor. And it happened that my number came up during the Vietnam War, so I ended up enlisting, and I served during the Vietnam War in the U.S. Air Force. In a way, I was lucky, although in a way, I wasn't. They were going to send me overseas to fight in Vietnam with the Air Force, but they didn't. So they ended up keeping me stateside, and they stopped sending people overseas in the early 1970s. And after I served 2 years and I was honorably discharged, they let me out early. And I swapped my remaining 2 years active duty and served in the Illinois Air National Guard. Well, when I got out of them, it was during, while I was in the military, actually, during the 1973 Arab-Israeli War, that I was watching TV and I saw this Israeli and Arab debating the Middle East conflict, Palestine, and the 1973 war in which Egypt, you know, surprised Israel, took parts of the Sinai, and Nixon stepped in and Kissinger, through this policy of appeasement, stopped the Israelis from destroying the Egyptian army a second time. They did it in 1967. They were going to do it again in 1973, but Kissinger stopped them, believing that if he could save Egyptian pride, because that's what matters to Arabs, our pride, he might be able to work out a peace agreement, which he ended up doing, very ineffective and hasn't done anything. But I'm watching these two people debate. The Israeli looked American. He sounded American. He dressed American. He was clean-shaven. The image was bigger than the story. And he didn't just speak English, he spoke American, almost baseball-type American. He connected with the audience that was watching him as he argued why Israel was so great and why the Arabs were so bad. And then when it came time for the Arab to speak, he was unshaven. He wasn't dressed very well. He looked like a foreigner. He had a heavy accent. He couldn't even speak English very well. He didn't even understand the basics of communication. And he was yelling. He was emotional. And he was blaming everything on the audience he was supposed to be speaking to and winning over. He was blaming them for all the troubles of Palestine and all of that. And it's true. I mean, the United States is to blame for a lot of Palestine and Arab world problems, but that's not how you get Americans to support you to change things. You don't yell at them and blame stuff on them. And when I saw that, I was yelling at the TV going, what are you doing? Tell them the truth. Explain what happened. And he couldn't do it. And I'm looking, this Israeli, it wasn't about the truth. It wasn't about the facts. It was about how he looked and how he sounded and how the audience identified with him because he looked just like them. The Arab guy didn't look like them, didn't sound like them, looked like a foreigner, and they were never going to identify with him. And I looked at that and I said, I know exactly what the problem is in the Arab American community and why we continue to be harassed, discriminated against, and why we continue to suffer, and why we continue to be frustrated. So I got out of the military. I went to the University of Illinois at Circle, and I studied political science and journalism, and I became a journalist because I understand communications. And what I have come to understand is that while I understand the effectiveness and how to write a press release and how to tell the story, the Arab community doesn't, and they don't want to know. They don't want somebody like me to help them, because what it does is it undermines the existing morally and ethically corrupt system of our organizations and our leadership, that they focus on themselves, they pat themselves on the back, they give themselves awards, they look at the census not as an opportunity to empower the community, but as a way to get money so they can hire people to put more people on their payroll to do their bidding, to become more influential, not in the United States, but in their own community. That's a problem with the Arab American community, and we need to change that. I'm Ray Hanania. Thanks for listening to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania. We've had a discussion of all the issues facing Arabs in America and the Middle East, from Israel to Palestine, Syria, and more. Visit www.hanania.com to get more information on all of my podcasts and on my award-winning opinion columns.